to another edition of In and Out of Sports in the Coach's Corner with Coach Butch McAdams. In and Out of Sports in the Coach's Corner is sponsored in part by Horton's Funeral Service, Dr. Edward T. Buford, the Athletic Republic Capital Region, and it is powered by our great friends at the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. Well, folks, we have another legend for you. And without further ado, let's bring him on. This guy, in one word, a winner. Two-time ACC Coach of the Year. Four-time Southern Conference Coach of the Year. Two-time CAA Coach of the Year. NCAA Award of Valor. And the Basketball Hall of Fame 2018. He really needs no introduction. He is the legendary, the iconic Coach Lefty Drizzell. Coach Drizzell, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for that introduction.
Well, well deserved. And, Coach, I'm looking at your extensive resume and list of accomplishments. But I got to tell you, Coach, probably the least known and the most important to me is in 1973, think back, July the 12th, you are on a fishing trip, a boating trip, and you become a true hero. I'm talking about not a hero by hitting a last-second shot or getting a last-second rebound, but you saved the lives of at least 10 children. Share that experience with us, Coach.
Well, it was a little bit different. I wasn't on a boating trip. I was fishing on the beach.
Okay.
It was a guy, I did my practice teaching under Paul Williamson at Duke. And so there was some row houses, and we just turned around, and there was fire coming out of them. So we called the high fire department, and finally they got out there, and we were going up there trying to get people out, and it was about 2 o'clock in the morning or something, and they were saying, get out of here, get out of here. And I said, look, y'all better get out of here, you're gonna burn up. That's all it was. It really wasn't. It's just lucky we were down there fishing at the time.
Yeah, but great job. And Coach, after so many years, you were finally inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame in 2018. What was that like for me and others? You know, we were on a platform saying Coach Drizzell should have been in years ago, but finally you got in. Share with us that wonderful experience, the call, and then that evening.
Well, it was great because, you know, when I retired, I had the third most wins of anybody in college coaching, and I had won 100 in high school, 100 and lost about 10. So anytime you get into Naismith Hall of Fame as a coach, you got to be happy and elated, and I was. And actually, it's probably pretty good that I waited so long, because people would have forgotten me if I'd been in there a long time ago. Now they know who I am.
You told a couple of funny stories. Of course, you, and we'll get into this a little later in the interview, being a Duke alum, and when you would go down to play Duke as a coach at Maryland, some of the Cameron crazies, so to speak, they would wear the top with no hair. And one of the students came and asked you to autograph it, and you put the X on it. And they say, Coach, that's not an autograph. And what did you tell him, Coach?
I told him I went to Duke. I couldn't write. Duke fans, they can be nasty and they can be funny. So it's both ways.
Yeah. Coach, let's start from the very beginning. You starting as a manager for the Granby High School teams in Norfolk, Virginia at the tender age of, what, 9 or 10 years old?
I was in second grade, I guess.
Wow.
7, 8, or 9, something like that.
Right.
Because, see, Granby High School back then went from the first grade to the 12th. So I went to Granby from the second grade, and then I got my first varsity letter in the fourth grade because I was a manager for the football, baseball, and basketball teams.
And
so that's the way I started learning how to coach, I guess.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you just probably couldn't wait to when you got to 8th, 9th grade, old enough to play on the team. And you did play, and you played exceptionally well. You know, in some cases, they say the better coaches were people who weren't exceptionally good players. You were a very good player at the high school level.
Yeah. Well, we won the state championship my senior year, and I was the MVP in the tournament, and we were ranked 8th. We had to beat the first-place team and third-place team, and then we beat Newport News High School, which is where I coached later, and won a state championship in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I started – learning how to coach in about the second grade because I was a manager for a basketball team that won the state championship, a football team that won 3 state championships, and a baseball team that won a state championship. So I kind of learned what it took to win.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Coach Lefty Drizel, legendary coach, Maryland University, Georgia State, and other places. Coach, let's talk about you again as a player, 59 points in 3 games. Now, back then, 59 points, 3 games, that's a little less than 20 a game. That was a lot of numbers back then.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And as I said, we were the 8th seeded team in the state tournament. And you know, we got a 6'7", 6'8" kid out of the pool hall. We used to shoot pool. This guy coming in, Lou Hopkins was his name, shooting pool, and he had dropped out of Granby, and sort of Donald Griffin, our coach, went down and talked to coming back to school, and he really helped us. He was good.
Uh-huh.
He's the biggest guy in the state tournament.
Yeah.
And back then, there weren't that many 6'7", 6'8" guys.
And when you were at the high school level, senior, what height did they list you as?
I think 6'4" or 6'2". I don't know. When I went to Duke, I was 6'5". But I grew a lot, you know, in my freshman year or something. I don't know. I was about 6'2" or 6'4" or something like that.
Yeah. And of course, as you mentioned, you go to Duke, good career there, and then afterwards, you take a job at the Ford Motoring Company. However, Coach, now you can confirm or deny, but your love for coaching and your passion was so strong that you were willing to take almost a $3,000 pay cut at the time so you could coach, and you said, hey, I'll make it up selling encyclopedias.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. I was making $6,000 at the Ford plant, and then I was offered $3,200 to coach JV basketball and JV football at Granby School that I had attended.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did, and I was promoted to varsity basketball coach my second year there.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there I went to Newport News High School.
Yeah.
And Newport News I went to Davidson.
Yeah, absolutely. You won it at Newport News. You had a 55-game winning streak?
57. Still a
57.
State record.
Wow.
For Division I schools.
Mm-hmm.
Moses couldn't beat it, and neither did Alonzo. They both won 50-some, but they didn't win 57.
Coach, I'm a former coach. You have some other coaches, current coaches and former coaches listening, and maybe some aspiring coaches listening. what is the secret of success to winning at just about every level? Of course, you have to have good players, but it's a little more than that. Can you share with us the secret of success of coaching?
Well, I always had a saying that the harder you work, the luckier you get. And that's the way I wanted my players to work hard, and probably I worked them too hard myself. But, you know, we just worked hard and, you know, tried to sell the school, the university. Now, I didn't have to do it in high school, but in college, you sell what your school had to offer. Davidson was a great academic school. Maryland was a great big 35,000 student. Davidson, we had 900 boys, that's all. But
wow.
It was a great academic school. So
yes,
we,
it was.
I got guys that were interested in the Ivy League, and like Fred Hetzel's mother wanted him to go to an Ivy League school. I said, well, you're going to have to pay his way. Come to Davidson, it'll be free. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of working hard and believing. I never was an assistant coach, so I coached like I like to play. I didn't have to learn anybody's system or teach anybody's system. I coached like I like to play. Now, you don't have to be a player to be a good coach, but I think it helped me.
Mm-hmm. Lefty Drizel is in the coach's corner. And, Coach, share with our listeners that this is a little-known story, and I wasn't aware of it. Speaking of you and your playing days, after you left Duke, you're coaching, JV, as you mentioned, but you also play some semi-pro ball, and you were so good that the Lakers, they weren't in L.A., they were in Minnesota at the time, that the Lakers gave you a tryout.
Well, they offered me one, but right before I left, you know, they wrote me and said they got too many guys coming in, and if you want to pay your way, you could come. And I said, no, I ain't paying my way. Because I was probably making more as a high school coach than the pros were. So I never went for a tryout. I kind of wish I had her now.
Yeah. Now, Davidson, boy, I tell you, you go to a small school, relatively small, and you build an outstanding program. You mentioned one of the all-time great players from Washington, D.C., Landon School, Fred Hetzel. And, of course, you had Mike Malloy as well as others. Talk about how you built that Davidson program into a national power.
Well, I just, like I told you, I knew how to coach. And I got out and I sold youngsters that wanted to go to a good academic school and get a scholarship. Back then, you couldn't get a scholarship to Harvard or Yale or Princeton. So we could give scholarships. So that's the way we did it. And I got some wonderful players.
Coach, do you ever get upset? And, you know, maybe not now, but at some point, because, as I mentioned, at every level, from high school to Davidson to University of Maryland to Madison to Georgia State, you've won. But yet, some people look at you more as a great recruiter than a coach. Does that ever upset you?
Yeah, it does, because I never recruited a player that Dean Smith wanted, except Tom McMillan. And Tom McMillan really wanted to go to North Carolina. He signed with North Carolina, but it didn't make anything because his parents weren't going to let him go there. They weren't going to sign. So, you know, all those worthy Perkins, Jordan, I recruited all. I've been in Jordan's bedroom in high school. I recruited every player that he ever had, Worthy, Perkins, all of them. And Jordan, and Duke, I don't think the only one I got over Duke, because Vic Bubas was a great recruiter, I got Fred Hetzel.
Yeah.
The only reason I got him is because he had already signed Bill Bradley, and he had signed five players, and I told him, Fred, you go there, you be the sixth man on a freshman team. So I don't know. I did recruit some great players, and a lot of them, like Leonard Byers, nobody recruited Leonard Byers but two schools.
Yeah, yeah.
And not a lot of people wanted him, but, you know, I got some great players. I helped them develop, and I was proud of them. I still am. Talk to them on the phone every time. Not all the time, but they call me a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And Coach, also, you were instrumental, and Dean Smith gets a lot of credit, rightfully so. But you're at Davidson, you're in the South, but yet you bring in an African-American player as well when a lot of Southern schools weren't doing that. And I'm speaking of Mike Malloy. Share with our listeners that.
No, Mike wasn't the first one. Charlie Scott was the first one.
Right.
I got a letter of intent from Charlie Scott right in my desk here.
Wow.
But Charlie Scott signed with me early in the early admission thing, and he helped me recruit Mike Malloy. In fact, they were supposed to be roommates. We all had a room for him and everything, and then Charlie ended up changing his mind and going to North Carolina. He didn't have national letter of intent. They just had conference letters of intent. So Mike Malloy was a great, great player.
Yes, he was. And
so was Charlie Scott. Charlie and I are very good friends.
Yes, yes. And you guys, ironically, were inducted, I think, the same year into the Basketball Hall of Fame. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, Coach, it was a funny story. Again, you're at Davidson. You build a powerhouse. And then legendary coach from North Carolina State calls you and say, hey, I want you to come.
Yeah, every case
yeah.
was my idol. I loved him. In fact,
right.
He recruited me out of high school. I visited NC State.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one, really, you think about it, that got big-time basketball started in the ACC.
Yeah.
Before
yeah.
then, when I went to Duke, most of the players on the team, except for Dick Groat, were football players. Wallace Wade recruited football players that played basketball. And then Everett Case is the one that came down from Indiana and started big-time basketball in the South. So when he called me, he wanted me to come over there and be his assistant for a year. And I thought about it because he was my idol. But I told him, I said, Coach, I got a better team here than you got right now. I'm not going to leave and come over there. If he had a better team than me, I might have gone.
Well, speaking of gone, and you left, and we're all happy here, and this is where it started. Big-time college basketball in the Washington metropolitan area. 1969, I remember that. I'm 18 years old. I'm an avid sports fan. It was a huge year in sport for the D.C. area. Vince Lombardi comes to coach the Burgundy and Gold. Ted Williams is coaching the Washington Senators. And then we get the announcement that Coach Lefty Dizell is coming to College Park. Man, that was huge, Coach Dizell. And you came in ablaze saying, I'm going to make the University of Maryland the UCLA of the East. Share with us that experience.
No, the reason I came, I left Davidson because we were ranked third in the country, and Charlie Scott beat us on the last second shot, and I had four starters coming back, so I didn't want to leave. But Kehoe talked me, and he said, look, we'll have Vince Lombardi in football, Ted Williams in baseball, and we want you here in basketball. So that kind of blew my mind. So that's one of the reasons I went.
And what was behind the UCLA of the East comment?
Well, I just thought Maryland in Washington, D.C. was very similar to UCLA, and UCLA had won about 10 national championships. So I said I'd like to make Maryland the UCLA of the East, which helped me recruit McMillan, Elmore, and John Lucas, and a lot of good players.
Coach, why is it today, and I know you still follow the game, you have some excellent coaches, but you don't have the coaches that are bigger than life with great charisma, like Lefty Dizelle, like Al McGuire, like a Abe Lemons, like a Tark the Shark. Why is it that coaches now are just so plain?
I don't know. I just think it's so much, you know, publicity on television and radio and newspapers. I think the players are more important now than the coaches. So, you know, the players are signing for millions of dollars. And back when we started, when we were coaching, players, most of them didn't even play pro basketball. And they weren't getting millions and millions of dollars like they are nowadays. So now I think the people in the press and all are more interested in the players than they are the coaches, I guess. I don't know. I never thought about it.
And then you bring in Midnight Madness. Now, was that a creation of you? Was that a creation of you and your assistant, George Raveling, at the time? How did that
start? And Jim Malone. It was, well, what it was, and I've made this suggestion to Feinstein, with this virus going around, I think they ought to start practice on November the 1st. Is when John Thompson started, because he said, if I can't get my ready, and back then you had to play your first game, everybody, on December the 1st. So if they said, we're going to start college basketball this year, you can't practice before November the 1st. Back then it was October the 15th. And then start the first college game December the 1st. Hopefully this junk will be over with. But that's where we started back then. And so I say, okay, we'll start at Midnight Madness, which is October the 15th, at midnight.
And it became a big deal with people would come into the, the Coalfield House and watch it, and then you would have the players run a timed mile?
Yeah, we did. So that's the way it got started, really. And then everybody started copying it.
Yeah.
They're still
yeah.
doing it most places.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of places, not most, but they don't call it Midnight Madness because you can start it any time you want to now. And Friday night at 7:00.
Yeah. Coach Lefty Dizelle was in the coach's corner with Butch McAdams. And Coach, speaking of just being a showman along with being a Hall of Fame coach, I remember watching the games, going to Coalfield House, and when you entered the court, they played Hail to the Chief as if the president was walking to the podium. how did that start?
I don't know how that got started. That was just something. I didn't have anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think they made him stop doing it.
Yeah. And Coach, ACC basketball in the 70s and 80s, man, it was just awesome. So many great teams, so many great players. Share with us those days of the rivalries with Maryland, North Carolina State, Maryland, and UNC, Duke, Clemson, et cetera.
Well, it was a great league. That's one reason. Another reason I left Davidson, because the ACC was much tougher than the Southern Conference. Although we had beaten it, Davidson, we beat Duke, NC State, and Wake Forest, but Dean would never play us. That way I'd get to play Dean every year, which was probably a mistake.
Yeah. And look, we as coaches, we don't play the what-if game. You know, we always play the what-was game. But just for a second, what would have been the outcome if Moses Malone had stayed at College Park?
Well, we would have won at least one national championship. See, you had to stay At that time, you had to stay at, no, wait a minute. I don't think you could sign at that time until after your class graduated. I don't remember. But Moses Malone was the greatest, one of the greatest players of all time. And we had a good team anyway. We went to the final eight without him that first. But, we would have had a great shot at it.
But, you know, Coach, I recall, Coach Lefty Drizel's in the coach's corner. Coach, I recall that while certainly you wanted him to play, but you were very instrumental in guiding him and assisting him in the decision to go to professional basketball.
Yeah, I was. I mean, he and I were great friends, and I really miss him right now. And, but, you know, I wanted Moses. Everybody said Moses was a bad student. He wasn't a great student. But, you know, he was a good student. He was conscientious. And, you know, I told the Utah Stars that signed him, I said, look, I want you to put in his contract that he's going to get, I forgot it was, $10,000 or $5,000, whatever it was, for every college credit he passes, because I want him to get an education, get a degree. And they did. That was in his contract that he got, I forget what it was, $5,000. It's a lot of money. And he went to summer school for a couple of years and got some money and passed some courses. And then he was making so much money he didn't need to go to college. But he was a great guy, great Christian man, and he never drank, he never smoked, he never used drugs or anything. He was a super person.
Sure, sure. Coach, that historic game still one of, if not the best NCAA men's basketball game that I've witnessed against North Carolina State. It was so good that it changed the dynamic and the format of March Madness.
Yeah, it did. And see, people forget this, but South Carolina got kicked out of or quit the ACC, so we didn't have seven teams. And so whoever won the regular season got a bye the first round of the ACC tournament. And that was North Carolina State's third game. It was our second game. It was our third game because they got by. They won the regular season. They were a great team. They won the national championship.
Yeah, and that game, that game was so good that people are saying, wait a minute, Maryland lost the game, but they may be the second best team in the country, second only to NC State, and they're not eligible for the tournament.
Yeah, well, it's the next year. They said two teams from each league could go, or any league. And now it's up to seven or eight teams, which I think is too many myself. But anyway, that's the way it was back then. For most of my career, you know, we lost in the ACC tournament finals six times. We were in the finals more than anybody in the ACC in my 17 years, except for North Carolina.
Wow.
So, we had a lot of great teams that we should have been in the NCAA, at Davidson and Maryland.
Yeah. Coach, let's talk about another great, great player, Lynn Bias. When you recruited, as you alluded to earlier in the conversation, coming out of high school, Lynn was a very good player. You know, he made the Capital Classic team. But no one could have projected that he would become arguably one of the greatest college players of all time. Did you see that in him?
No, he had come to my basketball camp since he was in the 7th, 8th grade. And, you know, I loved him as a player. But I didn't even start him as a freshman. Mm-hmm. You know, I know they showed some Michael Jordan playing against him, and Leonard only scored 10 points, only played 4 or 5 minutes. But then, you know, then after that he got great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he must have had a great work ethic.
Yeah, he did.
That type of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a great, great work ethic. Mm-hmm. And he worked hard. He was a born-again Christian, a great guy. And I still think that's the first time that he ever used drugs. In fact, I've asked all the players on the team then and before then, and they said no, they'd never heard of him using drugs.
Yeah, that was very unfortunate. And, you know, once again, looking at the what if and projection, man, can you imagine him going to an already accomplished Boston Celtics squad back then? How many more championships would they have won? And maybe it would have prolonged the career of Larry Bird, possibly.
Yeah, well, you know, that's speculation, but he'd have been a great player.
Yeah, yes. Yes, he certainly would have. Coach, what do you think of some of the players today? Just the game in general today. How would you compare and contrast the way the game is played today versus 20, 30 years ago?
No, I don't really know. Players are so good nowadays, it's unbelievable. And they were great when Michael Jordan played, too, so... I don't know. It's a different era, different, you know, Bill Russell and Kareem Jabbar and all those guys were great players, too.
And here's another coach's question. You've got great talent. You've always had talent. Coach Smith, Dean has had talent. All the great coaches have had talent. And is there a thin line between letting the players play to their strengths and keeping a structure? How do you balance the two? And when do you know when to turn players loose or to pull the reins back, so to speak?
Well, like I told you, I like to coach like I played. Now, you take Tony Bennett at Virginia. I don't know if he played that way, but he does a great job of teaching discipline on offense and defense. So, you know, I don't know. I think it's up to individual coach how he likes to play.
Mm-hmm. And, Coach, we got a few minutes left, but I want to talk about, we've talked about the rivalries in the ACC, but the local rivalry, you and Coach Thompson, two giants in Georgetown, the University of Maryland. Boy, you know what? We as fans, we wanted to see more of Georgetown and Maryland, but when we saw it, especially towards the end, they were epic games.
Well, you know, when Georgetown got into Big East, that was a tough league. And so John wasn't really very interested in playing us, and the ACC was a tough league, but it would have been a great series. But, well, you know, we just didn't agree upon playing, so it was it would have been a great series. But
yeah, Ernest Graham,
probably the two toughest leagues in the country. So
yeah, you know, you had some great players: Ernie Graham, JoJo Hunter, Billy Bryant, Turk Tillman, John Lucas, Mo Howard, on and on and on. When you went to recruit a player,
who were those first players? They weren't great players. They all left Maryland.
Well, they were great high school players, Coach.
Yeah, they were great high school players.
But so how, when you were recruiting, did you recruit by position? Did you recruit by just talent? You know, how did that go?
I recruited everybody that averaged 20 points a game, and then I mass recruited. I didn't. Most people nowadays just recruit 10 guys and figure they'll get 3 or 4. I didn't do it that way. I recruited everybody,
mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
then I figured somebody would like Maryland, which they did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Adrian Branch is a good friend of mine, and of course he was one of your players, a very good player. And, boy, he has the utmost respect for you. And, you know, he tells a story one time. You come in the locker room and they're not playing so well, and you look at him and you say, I know none of you guys are going to get married because you're all afraid of contact. True story, Coach.
You got to be careful with Adrian tells you. He's a great guy. He's a good friend of mine, but he makes up a lot of stories.
Now, how about this one? Now, how about this story? Your son, Chuck, very, very good friend of mine. He is coaching in the program where I started and doing a wonderful job winning, developing young men, great players. And so I asked him, I said, well, Chuck, is there any one thing you want me to ask your dad when I interview him? He said, yeah, ask him, why did he put me in the game against Carolina to take that last shot? And I always say, well, look, Chuck, you got fouled. Okay, but they just didn't call it.
Yeah, I think he did get fouled, or either Michael Jordan went up through the net and knocked the ball out. I don't know. Somebody said Worthy fouled him. You can see it on TV now because somebody called me the other day and said they were looking at it, and it was either Worthy or Perkins that fouled him. I don't know. But I put him in there because we had been running – We had an out-of-bounds play for a second left, and that's what it was, 2 seconds left. And we had been running it in practice, and he had made about 3 or 4 in a row, you know, just like as a decoy. And so that's why I put him in there, and he had a good shot. But,
yeah. Well, Coach, this has been awesome. I always like to ask our guests, legends such as yourself, to leave our listeners with some words of wisdom, some parting shots, and who better than Coach Lefty Driesell? Coach?
Well, you know, I've been a Christian all my life, and with this virus going around, you know, I think you just got to hope that the Lord spares you. And I think he will. And that's about my – and just work hard. Whatever you're doing, work hard at it, and you'll be successful. You know, all these great basketball players you've been mentioning, they worked hard. You know, Jordan worked hard. LeBron worked hard. All those guys, they weren't just born that way. They worked hard.
Well, Coach, man, thank you so much. This has been – quite an honor, and you continue to be ageless, and hey, man, you're just as sharp as you ever were.
All right, well, thank you. Enjoy it.
All right.
And I'm a big Marie fan, too.
That's right. Yeah. Frog pride, fighting frogs. All right, Coach. Thank you.
Okay, thank
you. All right, and folks, that was Coach Lefty Driesell, simply one of the best. And, yeah, we will continue to bring you the legends of sport here on In and Out of Sports in the Coach's Corner. Now, coming up tomorrow, we'll have another legend, the legendary coach Bob Wade out of Dunbar Senior High School, Baltimore, Maryland, built that program into a national powerhouse, and Coach Bob Wade was the very first African-American head coach in the ACC. So, yeah, that was – and also, if you missed this interview or if you want to hear it again, tomorrow you can go to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. That's the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. And you can go to my Facebook page, Butch McAdams. So you can hear this interview and all of the interviews that we have on this wonderful podcast. And, hey, I got to give big props to my partner out there, Ricky Hampton. Rick, are you there? My
right
man,
here,
Ricky
Coach.
Hampton.
How you doing, man?
Fantastic.
Really enjoyed that interview.
Yes. Well, we got a few minutes left. Let our listeners know a little bit about yourself, the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com, and this wonderful podcast. This is we're going into our second week, and I'm just so blessed and honored to partner up with you.
Oh, Coach, it's my honor and pleasure to have you aboard with us and be a part of the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio network. And for myself, I was a sports writer for 35 years, mostly here in the Detroit area. Grew up in Nashville, but I went to school your way, Virginia Union, down in Richmond.
Oh, yeah.
So I got a lot of friends and frat brothers up in the D.C. and the DMV area, man. So it's always good to be on and communicating with folks around there.
Yeah, yeah. And then also, you have a show, and so plug your show.
Yes, sir. We're on an hour after you, the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show. If you tune in Butch's show, we'll be on shortly after that, and you can go to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com website and get more information on that. Coach,
yeah.
I tell you, that interview with Coach Giselle was really interesting. I mean, he is certainly one of the legends of this game, and he helped push college basketball forward to where it is today.
I would agree. Now, he was an innovator. And as I said, people will often give him more credit as a recruiter than a coach. And I can understand why, but those of us who know the game know that he was a very good coach. He was a very good coach. And if you look at his teams, it wasn't that his teams weren't good. They just had to go against some slightly better teams. David Thompson, you know, Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, yeah. The NCAA tournament was structured at that time, too.
Yeah.
A lot of good teams, you know, you think about it, year in and year out, the guys that win the conference tournament don't always go on to win the national championship. So it's almost certain that one of those times they would have come out of there and gone on to win the national title as a third or fourth seed or something like that.
Well, I tell people, and this is nothing to take away from the Gary Williams team that won it, but for my money, that national championship team, and Coach Williams did a great job, they had great chemistry with Juan Dixon and company, Lonnie Baxter. But I don't think that they beat that John Lucas, Len Elmore team.
Oh, man. Those were some ballers there. And what was also interesting, I did not know that Coach Giselle opened up the recruiting to blacks down at Davidson. And essentially, you do it at Davidson, you're essentially doing it in the South. I was not familiar with the gentleman that he recruited there, McLemore.
No, Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy, okay.
Yeah, Mike Malloy was an awesome player. And I had remembered when he mentioned it that he had recruited Charlie Scott as well. So, yeah, no. Coach was always ahead of the game, an innovator, as I said. And he could, you know, he was a tremendous recruiter because people would say he was just so down to earth. And he would come in and sit at the table. And whatever you were eating, he would eat. And you know, the mothers just loved him. And so that's how he was able to get players.
Hey, Coach, did you want to take a couple of calls before we get on?
Sure, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, let's see if we can. Let's go to area code 202-1599. You're on with Coach Butch McAdam.
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. Maybe they just want to listen, Coach. We'll try another one.
Okay. All right, but that's fine.
Okay. Area code 301, last four digits, 4356.
All right. You're on the air. You have a question? We'll see. I know folks folks, see, we normally don't take calls, so you better take advantage of this. But the main thing in radio is not the calls, but the listenership. And I understand when you get the legends, as we will continue to have, that you want to listen. So that's fine. But if you do have a question or comment in the last couple of minutes, take advantage of it.
Okay, let's try one more, Coach.
Okay.
Area code 433, you're on the air. Area code 433.
Okay, sound like
I'm sorry, area code 443.
Oh. Yeah, that's
you're
the ball.
The
one. Okay.
Oh. We'll just close it down then, Coach.
Yeah, but that is fine. But no, now, did you have an opportunity to complete, and I know you started it, the wonderful documentary that debuted on Showtime this past weekend. But what have you heard about it thus far? And the little bit that you've watched, your thoughts?
Well, I was not aware of the number of players that was coming out of PG. That was stunning to me, and I'm right at the point where the gentleman unfortunately has to go to prison for a while. So that's where I am. But the ball is to come out of there. Now, when I was at Virginia Union in the 70s, the ballers were coming out of D.C. My classmate, Darwin Lilly, out of Baltimore, was a
oh my goodness
player for us.
Oh, great guy. Legendary player.
Yeah, man, he was something else. And he helped us win a national title at Virginia
mm-hmm.
Union in 1980. That team went on to win the national title with Darwin Lilly, Keith Ballantyne, who had transferred from North Carolina back home to Richmond. We won the NCAA Division II. National title. So,
wow.
The balls were coming out of D.C. at that time. And do you agree with their explanation of how they kind of moved out to Prince George's coach?
Yeah. Listen, and people, and of course, Lilly was from Baltimore. But you can't separate the two. When you look at the success of Prince George's County, it's because of the origin of that success was Washington, D.C. It's the bloodline. Okay, it's like Kobe Bryant took it to another level, but he had the bloodline and the genes of his father, Jelly Bean Bryant. And
right.
So the origin was Washington, D.C., where, as I explained, we had a leg up on most of the other cities because of Dr. Henderson, E.B. Henderson of Washington, was the first physical educator. And he went to study the game under Dr. Naismith. He brought the game back to Washington. And so the Washington area youngsters learn how to play the game firsthand and play the game right from a fundamental standpoint. And then after that, you had great athletes. I mean, Dr. Charles Drew was just a tremendous athlete. And then in basketball, you had Elgin Baylor. You had Warren Williams. Dave Bing, and on and on and on. And some of the players, after they had used their eligibility up into the D.C. public schools, went across the line in schools like Fairmont Heights to play one more year. Fatty Taylor, Roland Fatty Taylor was one. So, and now, of course, with gentrification and after the riots, people moved to Prince George's County, but it still has that D.C. influence. So, no, it's not an either-or. It's us against them. Here in the DMV, the point I'm trying to make is we're all one. The origin is D.C., and now it's Prince George's.
And you know what I'm interested to know a little bit more about? When you are developing players like that, there has to be some great coaching going on to teach these guys the skill set and the fundamentals you need to play at a high level. Because, you know, coach, you know, you can jump out the gym and run a 4.240, but if you don't have the skill set, it does not match up. So somebody has been given great instruction in the DMV over the years. There's some people.
Well, Rick, that's a great point. I used to jokingly say when someone says, well, this person can run and jump. And I said, well, you know, I had a dog named Spot that could run and jump, but he couldn't play basketball. So you have to be taught how to play. And the coaching, look, I had one of the godfathers of coaching in Washington, had his son on, Bobby Dwyer, talking about his father. This coming Sunday on In and Out of Sports, I'll have the nephew of the great coach Frank T. Bolden and, of course, Morgan Wooten, you know, Dave Brown, you know, John Wood. The list goes on and on. Great coaches, tremendous, tremendous coaches. But, again, the godfather of all of it, the trickle-down theory or the trickle-down effect, Dr. Edwin Bancroft Henderson. And all of the aforementioned coaches were disciples of Dr. Henderson. Again, the first black physical educator in America. The first one.
Wow.
Yeah, the first
one. I did not know that was something I learned out of that documentary also. Yeah.
Yeah. And the coaching.
And,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, all of that filters out of the great instruction you get. Or if you're unfortunate and you get a poor coach, it can stunt that development as well.
Yes, yes. And you look at the great coaches, Morgan Wooten, arguably the greatest, in Prince George's County, right across the line in Hyattsville. But make no mistake about it, the backbone, the foundation of that great Morgan Wooten program came from D.C. John Austin, who was on that legendary Carroll team, and the aforementioned Bob Dwyer, when he left Carroll, got on the telephone, called Coach Wooten and said, I got a great player who has a couple of years left. I want to send him to you at the MAPA. When John Austin came, we call him Sleepy, he was the first great city player, black player, to play at the MAPA. And then he brought his friend Johnny Jones, and then after Johnny Jones, Jim McBride, after McBride, Bernard Williams, Orby Nash, James Brown, Mark Edwards, Adrian Dantley, the list goes on and on. So now you have a Prince George's County school, but it's fueled by Washington, D.C. talent.
Yeah.
See how the two connect?
Absolutely. Hey, Coach, do you remember the Mantha Power Memorial game when they had a young girl?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember the game, and people talk about the sellout crowd at Cole Fieldhouse, but two other things. It was in a snowstorm that night. It was snowing cats and dogs outside, and you couldn't beg, borrow, or steal a ticket. Now, Rick, keep in mind, unlike maybe your native Detroit, in Washington, D.C., in the 60s, we didn't have good professional sports. The Burgundy and Gold Washington football team, they were awful. They were awful. And for the most part, they were lily white. The baseball team was awful. No Wizards of Bullets, no Caps. Before Coach Drizzell came, the college sports weren't good. But what we had and what was king of the mountain was high school. The first big sellout, the biggest sporting event in Washington, D.C. history, at the newly built D.C. Stadium, over 45,000 people, was a high school game, St. John's versus Eastern.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. And so when DeMatha and Power played, it was going to be a sellout. You couldn't beg, borrow, steal a ticket. People were probably outside in a snowstorm scalping tickets. It was huge.
Wow.
It was really huge.
Hey,
no
Coach,
questions.
We just got a couple more minutes. I want to go back to the other day. Your interview with Adrian Dantley was just fantastic and really insightful. And, you know, here in Detroit, Adrian is so well thought of because he was one of the Isaiah was the building block, but AD helped push the Pistons to championship caliber basketball with his incredible ability to go inside and just kill people. They always had a guy they could throw it into. And it was interesting to hear him talk about his career and his time here in Detroit, which did not turn out well, but he was definitely an important part of that great run that they had, even though he ended up not getting a ring.
Well, Adrian Dantley, everything you said, I echo. But also, Adrian Dantley brought professionalism to that team. He taught guys like Rodman and Dumars and anyone who would listen how to take care of their bodies, how to prepare to get the best out of their athleticism and their game. So, yeah, that was on the one. And speaking on the one, tomorrow we got Bob Wade, Coach Bob Wade at 7 p.m., so you want to join us. And then on Thursday at noon, we got a legendary guy. You know, you can make the argument he's one of the greatest players in D.C. that never played in the NBA. His name is Kurt Trouble Smith. So pass the word. Hey, this is your outlet to hear the legends of the games in and out of sports in the Coach's Corner. And also, folks, go, please go to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com website. You can get all of our shows, but also you can pull up some of the great interviews that Ricky Hampton has had, that Brother Gerving has had, and some of the great articles as it pertains to the African-American athlete. Well, we are flat out of time, but once again, I want to thank our sponsors, Horton's Funeral Service, over 80 years, just the very best, located 600 Kennedy Street Northwest, the Athletic Republic Capital Region, and Dr. Edward T. Buford. And, of course, again, this show is powered by the aforementioned the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. So, folks, always make good decisions because life is hard, but it's even harder when you're stupid. We'll see you next time. Okay.